Harry, if I may, I'd like to ask you back to the microphone to answer questions, very penetrating questions we have from this audience over here, I might add. But I would apologize to the audience that we only have one mic, I'm afraid, so you're going to have to come up here to pose your question. It's important you ask the question into the microphone so it's recorded for television viewers and also for our website. Please identify yourself before you ask the question and be brief with your question. So you are now invited to question Professor Harry Glasbeck. Bev Mundell.
I'm Bev Mundell Atherstone, and thank you very much for your talk. You certainly brought many different things together and made it much more understandable. As a psychologist, I would have to disagree with you about fear motivating us. Fear doesn't seem to empower people, it just shuts people down. But information and ideas of how to change things does empower us. So my question is, now that we know the problem, what's the answer?
You won't be surprised to know that I always get that question. And I never have an answer for it. If I had the answer for it, do you think I'd be wasting my time with you? The answer lies, actually, within you. It depends what view you take of the society you want to live in. And I suspect there are many, many different views in this room. My pitch is this. If you actually believe, as we formally claim to believe, in liberalism as a political system and in a market economy as an economic system, then the corporation is clearly an enemy. And you have to make reforms to make that corporation comply with the rules that come from those values. If you believe that we ought to change from a liberal political system and a market economic system altogether, and there may be some in this room who believe that as well, that we should have... Then my analysis will not help you directly. It will only point out, it will only provide fodder for your claim that there should be radical revolutionary change. So the answer I've tried to work out is the answer from within my analytical framework, not my political framework, by the way, because I'm probably one of those people who would like to drop this whole thing altogether and start all over from scratch again. But from within the existing framework, and from my analysis, such as it is, there are only certain possibilities available. What I actually describe is that the design of the corporation is what causes people to be encouraged to be irresponsible. And that is, therefore, has to change. Now, how do I do that? Well, first of all, we draw attention to the fact that the corporation, because of its design, does many harms, and is fundamentally undemocratic internally. Now, just I don't want to take up too much time, but I would like to use all the other 25 minutes I have. There are too many questions. But if you look at the design of the corporation, remember I mentioned that shareholders get a right to vote for the directors who decide policies, and they can kick them out. Why do they get a right to vote, I ask myself. Why? Is it because they're risk-takers? Absolutely not. They've got limited fiscal liability. Is it because they're on the hook if something bad goes wrong and they might be criminally prosecuted? Absolutely not. They've got legal immunity. So why the hell do they get a vote? Why shouldn't the people who really take the risk take a vote? If directors make a bad decision about an investment and plants are closed, who bears the risk? Worker. When they refuse to put in ventilation because it can make increased profits, Who bears the risk? Workers. Those risks are unlimited. Why don't they get a vote? So the first step would be, we democratize the corporation from within. Secondly, we argue for the fact that the people responsible for the act of the corporation, the people who want the profits rising of their share values, rising, that those people be prosecuted every time something terrible is done. Really terrible is done. Like, for instance, I'll just use asbestos. For years, the ancient Greeks knew that white stuff killed their slaves. In 1919, in Canada, United States, no life insurance company, no life insurance, would insure anyone's life who had been anywhere near asbestos. In 1931 was the first long and documented report in the medical journal, in the Lancet in Britain. Not until the 1970s did the major corporations admit that they'd been lying and cheating on all the records and reports and destroying them and killing people. They knew at all times. Now, that being so, all these, there was only the executives and directors made all those decisions, but shareholders were collecting dividends and making money on the sale of their shares. Why not say to them, you are receivers of stolen goods, and put them in jail? I've got to stop, but the real answer comes later. All right, but I don't know whether that will do for the moment. Okay.
No, we very much want to hear the real answer, but we've got, as you can see, lots of questioners. We want to get in as many questions as possible.
Howard Forsyth. He's right. The corporation is the enemy, and Sir Galahad is democracy. You can't have them both. We don't have to destroy the corporation, but we have to make a fantastic change in how they act. There's another book. This is our speaker's book. This is a book, Declining World Order, that says the U.S. is in decline, and this will help because most of these corporate bastards are in the U.S. But there is a way to go about it, and I want to ask him about it in just a second. But meantime, let me tell you something I think interesting. It was 75 years ago when I was working on a PhD at the University of Minnesota, and I knew of Edwin Sutherland of Indiana University, who wrote the first book called White Collar Crime. I knew then from meetings they were having in the Midwest that all kinds of crimes were being done by corporations, and it massively outdid the crime done by all of the poor people on little quantities who were punished bitterly, and the corporate people are not punished at all, and it's a massive trouble to our system. Part of the cure is in Pizzagatti's book, Greed and Good. They'll have it in the library pretty soon. It says that even in Canada, and Canada might get ahead of any country in the world if they would do this, we can go for a 1 to 10 or 125 maximum and minimum wage. No corporation can give anybody $1 million by all forms of revenue if they don't have 125th of that as a minimum wage, and the two are tied together. Why wouldn't that work? Isn't that feasible in Canada? Even in Lethbridge, we could do that on any corporation that wants these giveaways. We give them for Southeast Lethbridge and ask no questions about how massively they're abusing us by this corporate system. Can we do it?
Yes. There's nothing in law stopping it.
Thank you very much for that brief answer, and I will ask our questioners to be brief with their questions. Thank you.
Doug Featherbridge, it seems to me, and a lot of others, that over the last several decades, the political power of corporations has increased tremendously. And I wonder if could you please expand a little bit on whether I'm right, wrong, or why?
Obviously that's right. The political power is immense, and it comes from the same political power that wealthy classes have always had. They eventually, the wealth earner, in an economy that relies on private investment to create welfare for all of its citizens, the wealth owner is capable of going to a government and saying, unless you give us better conditions to make more wealth, we will take our wealth and go elsewhere. And of course, once you get corporations, especially very large corporations, you get much more wealth concentrated in a couple of hands. And when you do that, they've got disproportionate amount of power over life and death decisions of government. That's why politicians are so knee-jerky. They like to believe they're independent, but they really always fall into line when pushed in that way. And for instance, you can see that in many, because I haven't got much time to expand, but I'll just tell you the way I used to explain it to my students very quickly. When I want something, I do all the democratic things. I write a letter. I offer an opinion. I write a book. I meet with like-minded people. I agitate. I join a political party. I walk in freezing cold streets holding up slogans. And I picket. I do all of these things, as I should. Wealth owners, through corporations, the executive corporations, do none of that. They might buy a political party, but they do none of the rest. What they do is, they lunch. They ring up the prime minister and say, let's lunch. And the prime minister has lunch with them, and they tell him what they want. Or alternatively, they join him as part of Team Canada to help Canada get the right return for its citizens by getting permission for these corporations to set up elsewhere. They run our lives, and of course they control our media.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Aaron Coldale. What's this bottom book?
You have to take that into this one.
Yeah. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, honored guests here. I'm Aaron from Coldale. Can you show me the bottom book? I'd like to see the title of that.
I can, but we do want to hear your
question. Okay. My question is, why do lawyers take up a case when they know there was irrigation rights there I bought from, paid $7,500, still take on the case and sue me, and the lawyer tells me to settle out of court when it is wrong, then I'm left wide open, naked like a jaybird, according to law and according to finances then. And then the lawyer leaves town with $150,000 of my dollars, and the old police station is closed. Why can they do that and just run and scuttle like the good old boys and look good in public?
Okay, thank you.
That's a very specific case. I don't know if you'd like to comment on that or move on.
All right. I guess I can say
it is obviously something I cannot speak on. As a generality, lawyers are hired guns. They're asked by one person to do X and by the other person to do anti-X. And that's what they do within the manipulative limits of the law. And what happened in this case, of course, I have no way of knowing.
Paul Hinman. A short comment and a question that I agree with many things you said, but the one thing that you failed to say is corporations do not have a vote. They're not on any voters list. And we empower these corporations, and I'll use the example of Walmart, by going and buying there. We, the people, are the ones who give them the power. We choose to do those things. And if everybody in Lethbridge was tomorrow to say they're not going to go purchase at Walmart, they would leave. And so my comment is it not a matter... But is it not a matter of education? Our coat of arms says strong and free, which means educated, And the problem is that the people need to be educated and not bought by those big corporations, because we can vote this corrupt government out and change the laws, and it's the lawyers who have made those laws. We have invisible friends who go and buy from those people and give them power. What, isn't it back to just the people and putting people in power to make laws that put us on an equal basis, rather than saying that they've taken something from us?
Two sides of one coin, I would say. We can't take it back because they have taken it from us. There are a number of propositions in that comment and question. I also would like to see people take control over their lives and take it wherever they want to take it. Walmart, to us, or to many people, is an obvious evildoer, because it buys cheap and doesn't treat its personnel very well. Of course, you could describe it as a very good citizen, if you wish. Because after all, it provides really cheap goods to people who otherwise couldn't afford them. There's another easy question. My beef is not so much with the particular. I mean, that's part and parcel of private enterprise. It does both good and bad at the same time. Right? That's not something you can solve by just simply saying don't buy at Walmart. Where else would you then buy? Costco? Right? Or somewhere where you can't afford to shop? And it's not an obvious question, even if people were educated. So it doesn't seem to me that that is a very... And I understand people's boycotts, consumer boycotts. They're a very good idea. They don't work very well. And remember what they are. They're not demanding. They're asking people not to do something. Right? That's why they're so pleasing to the middle classes. They're being asked not to buy something that they actually don't need. Right? And so it's not a very tough sell. But what if it comes to, say, for a computer that they want? How educated do we have to be to know how the chip was made, where it was made? That it was dug, that the stuff was dug out of cool tan mud in Africa, where people are endangered, slaved, and raped together. How do people get to know about that? And that's in every capacitor you have, in all your electronic lives. How do you stop participating? And that's the real issue for me. It's pervasive. You can't avoid it, you have to confront it. You can't just cherry pick. I don't like Nike. I don't like Walmart. But I do like some other corporation because I know nothing about it. No. My proposition is not that they're all bad or good. My proposition is that they attack our values. And they can vote, by the way, in some municipalities in the world. As rate fails. Just let you know.
Yes, my name is Heather Caldwell. Excuse me. Hold this one here. First, I would like to address my concern with your comment earlier, Mr. Hinneman. I'm gravely concerned with the thought that we have to ask the lower 10% of our population to severely impact their quality of life by having to purchase elsewhere. As was mentioned, the prices are so low there. I think we need to come up with some other answers. But a really quick question. First off, I wonder if you can address or present your thoughts on this when our corporations start to form large coalitions similar to the Canadian Council of Chief Executives. And also one of the things that they are currently discussing or had been in the 2004 budget, where they talk about corporate tax cuts and how that will increase their ability to increase their charitable spending.
I'm not up to date with the tax cut thing because I flit in and out of Canada to go to another corporate controlled country. Yes, the chief executives meeting, forming clubs. Now, this has got two aspects of which you ought to be aware, or which I want to bring up anyhow. One is the economic one. Adam Smith, in 1776, the father of the market economy, wrote, you shouldn't allow things like commercial clubs, chambers of commerce, chambers of manufacture, shouldn't be allowed to be formed because you can't put three or four merchants in a room before they start plotting on how to fix prices. Right? He said, you just can't. You just can't have them. And that was always understood at the about the market. That was what. So that's the economic aspect. The political aspect, which was what the question was about, that points to the profound anti-democratic nature of the corporation. Remember that these chief executives are elected only by their shareholders to make profits. When they join an association like that, and when they go and lobby the government for a tax cut or a trade cut or a special deal of one kind or another, whenever they do that, they're speaking on behalf of no one. They don't consult their shareholders who vote for them. They don't consult their board. They don't consult the workers who work for them. They just get together as a community of executives and say, what kind of ideological, political, and economic world do we want to live in? Let's agree on that and drive it through the government. Now, they hide all that. They have Fraser Institutes and C.D. Howe Institute, and they fund all these people with shareholders' money. They never ask for that either. Never. Never explain that. They just do it. Profoundly anti-democratic. And of course, what they're always saying, here, I'll explain very, very quickly how uneven all this is. I come here, and some of you came because you're interested citizens. I never, never get invited to the Albany Club, the Empire Club, or any of those. People who are much, much worse speakers, I don't think I'm very good, but people who are much, much worse than me get invited all the time. And it's not because they're interesting.
Thank you.
Boy, last week I told SACPA we need more provocative and dynamic speakers. I'll never say that again. I apologize to SACPA. My question is there any hope or is it a different perspective that Conrad Black's empire is in tatters? Enron people have been sent to jail for 10 to 20 years. Bernie Ebers is facing 25 years. Is there any hope in this corporate world that these kinds of charges will dampen some of this spirit of non-liability and responsibility?
No. I'm glad somebody brought that up. You notice I didn't speak about any of those things. Enron, Nortel, Adelphia, WorldCom, any of these things that have been hounding your newspapers and the like. You see, the reason for that is because what happened there is that major executives and shareholders cheated from shareholders. See, that's why you got action. That's why you got immediate action. It took 8 months to get the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, the Remedial Act, which followed in the United States. When the Westray mine was blown up, complete neglect by the owners and the government, it took 12 years to get the legislative reform. And it's no good. The thing is, and in all these people, the Conrad Black case, Kenny Lay, and Brian Ebbers, I don't know them personally, whoever they are. They don't talk to me. In all those cases, they were prosecuted as executives, not as shareholders. In fact, they usually get rich while they're being prosecuted. So recently, they've been asked to give back the money they made as executives, not as shareholders. So, for instance, Martha Stewart, when she was in jail, you remember her, made $80 million. It's a real tough going there, because what happened, she brought her company such disrepute by her piddling activities, that the shares went down. As soon as she was charged and jailed, the matter was over and the shares went up. And she held most of the shares. And so she's sitting in jail, profiteering. That's true of Conrad Black. Every time Conrad Black is charged with some other alleged offense or sued for some other thing, the share value goes up. He holds most of the shares.
I'd like to get just two more quick questions in, and I see John Boris hovering there, and we'll invite him up if he promises to be brief.
Oh, I did.
Then I'm not going to give you the mic. We have a lady here, and other people want to ask questions too. John, please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Sir, it's been a long time since I enjoyed something that you presented today. I think I've been in this council for 35 years and gone whenever I could, and you have equaled most of the people that we've had, and I can't think of anybody that I enjoyed better. I would just like to add, usually I don't ask a brief question, but this will be a brief question. Sir, you never mentioned one aspect of our system, our capitalist system, that I think is important and is being abused left, right, and center now, and that is the bankruptcy. Right now, I think there isn't an airline in the United States that isn't filing for protection under a bankruptcy act, and this is to rearrange everything so you can put it on a footing that will be accepted by the legal community. Is there anything you can say to help us on that, please?
Nothing to help you with, but some explanation. I agree that bankruptcy is being used in a remarkable way just now by major corporations, and I have my own views as to what's happening. I'll be as brief as I can. There's been a real shift in capitalism. It is no longer so much about production as it is about finance, and so you can see that in the numbers. Only something like 6% of all the money floating around the world every day goes into productive activity inside these corporations. Only 1% of all shares bought and sold every day, only 1% of the value of the shares goes into productive activity. So that is really what you have is a whole financial set of arrangements which use the corporation as a substratum, as an excuse for their transactions, as a basis for their transaction. And that's another cause for irresponsibility, because those people are not at all interested in the way things are produced. And that being my view at the moment, and I make changes if I get old enough, but if that being my view at the moment, what you see in the bankruptcies is part of that. What finance capital, bankers, and lenders are doing, they're going to producers like Stelco, Air Canada, Delta, United Airlines, Northwest Airlines, and the like, and they go to them, and they say to them, we don't like the return on the values we're getting for our loans and our investment in your corporation. You must, quote, the famous word, restructure. And if you don't, we will no longer guarantee your loans or our investment, which, of course, puts the corporate boards and executives in terrible trouble. How do we restructure, please, sir, they say? Well, get rid of workers by going elsewhere. And you see the headlines every day. I got one this morning. MDS, restructure, slashes 500 jobs. Shares jump 12%. Right? You see these headlines every day. Restructure, the other way, and that's the favorite way in Canada at the moment, is get rid of pension obligations. Make the pension obligation a personal one for every individual in our society. And that's ideological as well as profiteering. If more of us has to rely on our individual investment and achievement, the less notion there will be that we have to share with each other. And so what they have is they're changing these plans from defined benefits to defined contribution, as they call it. And that is the crux of all those battles around bankruptcy at the moment. There is another form of bankruptcy when corporations owe a huge amount of money, like the asbestos companies. They go into bankruptcy, put a fund aside, and wash their hands of the whole matter, and start anew. So bankruptcy is used for both those purposes, and that's as much as I can say about it.
Thank you. We started a couple of minutes late, and we're going to have just the last question now. There are more people who want to ask questions. I would recommend they go to the university due tomorrow at 7 p.m. to ask Harry those questions. Lisa.
It is free. That's what I'm hearing. My name is Lisa Lambert, and my question relates to C24, the campaign finance reform. One of the changes to campaign financing in Canada in the last 2 years has been that corporations are no longer allowed to donate beyond a measly amount. I'm wondering if you see that as having giving us hope that some of the democracy can be brought in again with the limitations that places on them.
Again, not something I'm all that familiar with, but I can put it this way. Anything that stops corporations participate directly in our political electoral life would be good, simply because they don't represent any social views other than their profit views. So that would be good. They're impersonal. We don't want them to participate. And if they're allowed to speak with money, they have more money than anyone else. And you remember the free trade debate from years ago, whether you're in favor or against free trade, doesn't really matter. But that was a campaign in which corporations gave more money to the